I'm Tommy McNeil. A Kurdish military leader says that President Trump has abandoned her people. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
Ilhan Ahmed, who arrived in Washington Monday, tells reporters President Trump's withdrawal of U.S. troops from northern Syria is akin to genocide. She also calls on the president to stop these massacres. She met with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and Democrat Chris Van Hollen, two of the sponsors of a bipartisan measure to impose economic sanctions on Turkey for its invasion of northern Syria and attacks on her fellow Kurds. Both say the U.S. needs to keep a modest number of troops in Syria and provide air protection for the Kurds. Graham also says there's a need for an international force as a buffer between Turkish and Kurdish forces. Tim McGuire, Washington.
The top American commander in Afghanistan revealed Monday the size of U.S. troop force in the country has quietly been reduced by 2,000 over the last year, insisting remaining military personnel are still capable of reaching their stated objectives. The revelation by General Austin Scott Miller means the number of residual U.S. force now stands at roughly 12,000 soldiers. They are tasked with fighting terrorist groups. They include Al-Qaeda and Islamic State, as well as training, advising, and assisting Afghan forces battling Taliban insurgents. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Monday that he has failed to form a new government following last month's inconclusive parliamentary election, making way for centrist rival Benny Gantz to try to put together a majority coalition of lawmakers and become the country's new leader. Netanyahu, already the Jewish state's longest-serving premier, was trying for a fifth term as prime minister, but Netanyahu, head of the conservative Likud party, told Israeli's president that he was unable to form a 61-seat majority by joining in a unity government with Gantz's centrist Blue and White Party. This is VOA News. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson was prevented from holding another vote on his Brexit deal Monday, giving his opponents more time to thwart his plans. Reuters' David Doyle.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson faces a potentially perilous process of ratifying his Brexit divorce deal in Parliament.
Order!
After the Speaker of the House of Commons refused to allow a vote on it on Monday. John Bercow said a vote would not be permitted as the same issue had been discussed 2 days earlier.
The ayes have it!
When lawmakers turned Johnson's big Brexit day into a humiliation. Saturday's vote means that Johnson's government now has to bring forward legislation in order to get the deal passed. That gives the PM's opponents the opportunity to make amendments that could make the withdrawal deal unpalatable to a large swathe of Johnson's own party.
That's Reuters' David Doyle. After close parliamentary elections in Canada Monday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is poised to hold on to power, although, as VOA's Lattice Ahok explains, the political landscape has changed and Trudeau's power weakened.
Several scandals in the last 2 years led to a declining support. Trudeau's former attorney general said he pressured her to stop the criminal prosecution of a Quebec engineering company that was charged with bribery. Adding to the trouble was the emergence of Trudeau's photos from the 1990s and 2001, showing him in blackface or brownface, which is considered a form of racial slur. His chief opponent, Conservative Andrew Scheer, has used the controversies to forge ahead.
Justin Trudeau has divided Canadians, he's divided provinces. He's failed to stand up for the types of big ideas, the big projects that can bring this country together.
Scheer is also promising to balance the federal budget and eliminate a carbon tax on fossil fuels. Zlatica Hoch, VOA News, Washington.
President Donald Trump continues to lash out at Democrats and the media after criticism prompted him to cancel his plan to hold a meeting for leaders of major industrialized countries at one of his properties in Florida. He said, "You people with this phony emoluments clause," Trump said to reporters during a cabinet meeting on Monday. The nobility clause of the U.S. Constitution is intended to prevent federal office holders from receiving any type of compensation from foreign governments to avoid a corrupting influence. The Trump administration's announcement last Thursday that the next year's Group of Seven summit would be held at the Trump Doral Resort ran into an immediate backlash from lawmakers, including Republicans and the president's own party. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October the 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Guinea has again postponed December's controversial parliamentary elections.
They have to have an electoral list before beginning to call election. They don't have an electoral list because they didn't take the time what was indicated by the law in Guinea. That is 3 months to do so.
Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea. There have been more revealing testimonies before Gambia's Truth Commission. Heavy rains caused flooding and loss of life in Kenya. And the mayor of Johannesburg steps down and resigns from the opposition Democratic Alliance Party.
It's an unfortunate development in all honesty, because as the party, we would have preferred for Mayor Herman Mashaba to finish his term.
Solly Malasi is the spokesperson for South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance Party. Rwanda's government appeals to the FDLR rebels to lay down their arms and return home. And birth rates registration in 4 of African countries are higher. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Guinea's Electoral Commission has again postponed the much-awaited and controversial parliamentary elections to an unspecified date. The election was scheduled to take place in December this year after being postponed again from January this year. There were protests last week against what the opposition say is an attempt by President Alpha Conde to seek a third term. Some in the opposition have accused the president of refusing to hold the parliamentary election as a pretext to have a third term after his current second term ends next year. Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. He says one reason for the postponement could be that the commission failed to put together an electoral list before scheduling the election.
They decided today, but you know, those elections cannot be held at the date that they indicated. I'm talking about the 28th of December, because it was too short.
What reasons did the Elections Commission give for postponing the election?
You know, they just go on the wall, you know, as they say in France, contre le mur. There is no solution, because they have to absolutely to have an electoral list before beginning to call the election. They don't have an electoral list because they didn't take the time what was indicated by the law in Guinea. That is 3 months to do so. They want to do it in 25 days. It's just not possible. So they say those people from Francophonie, they came and they discussed and they find that it's absolutely not possible to do it in 2, 3, or 4 months.
If they cannot have this parliamentary election, what does this mean? Because one of your colleagues have accused the president, saying that he was trying not to have the election, because if the elections are not held, that means the members who are in parliament right now will continue to serve, which gives the president more time to stay in power. How does this play?
No, today that cannot be possible, you know, because everybody knows that we have to go through a new process. And in that new process, opposition have to be included. If we do so, we will start again the inscription of all electors, and that take time, and we withdraw our parliamentary deputy from the Congress. We told them to stay home, and now they can do nothing, you know. We just have to discuss about this matter and to find a way.
Did you say the president or the Elections Commission postponed the elections because of intervention from the Francophonie?
I think Francophonie gave them the possibility to have this position, but there was no solution to do those elections in the date we indicate.
Are you saying that the opposition is satisfied the fact that the elections are postponed?
There was no way to do those elections 28th, so I'm satisfied? Not. We know that it will be not possible. I think we have a program that show clearly that the Electoral Commission is working in the order of the president. When the president say to do something, we will go to do it, even they know that it's not possible. I think this is a drama for the country.
You have been involved in protests against the president, accusing him of trying to stay in power or have a third term. How does this announcement to postpone the election play into that?
I want to correct something. We didn't accuse the president to want to go to the third term. There was campaign during more than 6 months, 1 year. about this question. So that new position did not change the situation of the third mandate in the country. So we continue to protest against the possibility for Alpha Condé to have a third term. We want president to say that he will respect our constitution. If not, we will continue the protest until he changes his mind about the third term.
Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Gambia's former military junta vice chairman and defense minister has denied killing the country's former finance minister. Retired Army Captain Edward Senghatère made the denial on Monday and at the Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. Senghatère claimed that the former finance minister Ousmane Kourou Cissé might have been killed after he was tasked to hand over Libyan funds that were meant to finance the rebellion in the southern province of Casamance. Pandere Umbai reports.
Families' hope of having a final closure on the alleged murder of former finance minister Ousmane Kourou Cissé has been dashed away. The former junta vice chairman, Edward David Senghatère, who has been named as the prime suspect behind that incident, has denied taking part in the murder of Cissé.
The last time I saw Kourou Cissé alive was at the airport when we went to see off Jammeh. After we dispersed from the airport, I went home, and the following day, I believe it must have been a weekend, so my routine would have been to go to the stadium in the morning to play football. It was later on in the morning upon my return that I received a call from the Secretary General, Alhaji Mustapha Awada, and he had told me that we had lost the finance minister.
Kourou Cissé was alleged to have been murdered in June of 1995. It has been alleged that he was murdered at the home of the former junta local government minister, Yankuba Touré. His body was dumped into his official car and later set ablaze in the outskirts of Jambour village. TRRC lead counsel El Safal then went on to ask Senghatère to shed light on the reason behind Kourou Cissé's murder.
Why was Mr. Kourou Cissé assassinated?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, it had involved some money from Libya that was being taken to the Casamance rebels.
Senghatère says he had attended a meeting at the State House where Jammé, the late former intelligence chief Samba Ba, and Kourou Cissé were present. In that meeting, he says Jammé had complained about the closure of the Gambia-Senegalese border by the Senegalese government. He says they were told by Jammé that there were funds from Libya to arm the rebels in Casamance.
DG NIA had told, his first quick reaction was, sir, you need to use diplomatic means to solve this issue. And I agreed. Now, Kourou was definitely in support of Jammé and gave him an idea of how to get back at Senegal.
Senghatère claimed that Kourou Cissé had suggested to Jammé to ground the ferries at the Ili Tenda and Bamba Tenda ferry crossing to deny Senegalese travelers and motorists from crossing. He also alleged that Cissé was given $280,000 to hand it over to the rebels. Lead counsel El Safal wasn't convinced by Senghatère's testimony. He says Senghatère had denied all the 50 allegations leveled against him by witnesses.
I have accepted what I have done. What I have not done, counsel, I can never accept. It doesn't matter if the heavens fall. I would not accept what I have not done.
Perhaps maybe if the heavens fall, we would not hear the whole truth from you, Mr. Senghatère.
Senghatère was offended by Fall's remark. He called on the commission chairman to intervene. He says it was wrong for Fall to portray him as a liar. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October the 22nd. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. The spokesperson for South Africa's main opposition, Democratic Alliance Party, says the decision by the mayor of Johannesburg to step down and resign from the party is regrettable. Hermann Mashaba announced he will step down next month as the mayor of Johannesburg and resign from the Democratic Alliance Party. His planned resignation comes after the recent election of Helen Zille as chairperson of the party's federal council. Spokesperson Solly Malatsi says efforts by leaders of the party to resolve the mayor's concerns appear to have failed to persuade him to change his mind.
It's an unfortunate development, in all honesty, because as the party, we would have preferred for Mayor Herman Mashaba to finish his term. Leading a coalition government in South Africa is quite a recent political feature in our political landscape. Those coalition governments are, by their design, very complicated, particularly Johannesburg, where the DA only obtained 38% of the vote in the 2016 local government election. As is often the case in any organization, there will be robust differences about policy decisions, about major political developments in their organization. But we are of the same view that it is nothing that would not have been resolved by dialogue. However, when an individual chooses to resign, despite the leadership of the party's attempts to convince them otherwise, there is very little the party can do.
Some South Africans have said that the DA as a party should try to negotiate with him to try to find a way of resolving this. What do you make of this?
Well, there were attempts, and as a result of the outcome of those attempts, the mayor will be serving until the end of November. That is, you know, the result of a compromise negotiation. The mayor was adamant that he needs to go.
Some people are suggesting that the return of Helen Zille to the party leadership basically is an attempt by the party to try to win back white conservative.
Well, the speculation is naively and inaccurately looking at the situation in the Democratic Alliance. At the end of the day, a democratic process brings out a democratic outcome. Some individual internally and externally may not like that, but it is the outcome of a democratic process. The DA's Federal Council, which chose Helen Zille as the successor to James Self, who was the incumbent as the Federal Council chairperson, composes of vast demographics, including black South Africans, white South Africans, Indian South Africans, and South Africans from all tracks of life.
The assessment by political analysts in South Africa is that Mashabe's resignation exposes what they described as deep divisions within the rank and file of the party. What do you make of such an assessment?
Well, it's a dramatization of the development in the Democratic Alliance based on a very simple yet distorted analysis of what is happening in the organization.
Sally Malatsi is the spokesperson for South Africa's main opposition, Democratic Alliance Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Cape Town. At least 10 people have died in the last 4 days in Kenya from flash floods in different parts of the country, and thousands have been displaced as roads have been cut off. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, 40 counties out of the 47 have been affected.
The roads are impassable in most parts of the country as heavy downpour continues in many parts of the country. In Homa Bay County, the roads were cut off as government officials got stranded in the villages. Area Senator Moses Kajuang now blames the national government for its failure to construct good roads in the region.
60 years later, it is still the same state of affairs. Recently, we have made special appeal to Presidential Delivery Unit to upgrade the two Suba roads. There's one where a contract had been given when we were in Grand Coalition, but the contractors failed to perform.
Over the weekend, 11 officials from the Kenya Forest Service in Lodwar, Turkana County, were trapped in their offices for at least 10 hours after River Takwele broke its banks. Devolution Cabinet Secretary Jenu Amalwa is already touring the affected areas with the relief foods as he appeals to donors for more support.
Our commitment as national government is to ensure that we support the affected counties and all the affected families. We have enough food that we will be distributing to the affected families.
People have fled their homes in northeastern parts of the country after water submerged their residential forcing amid calls for the government's assistance. Mr. Amalwa says disaster management equipment should be put in place in each county in order to avoid last-minute rush.
We have a policy in place and we're strengthening the legal and policy framework for disaster risk management. And those that are dealing with the necessary legislation, we want to urge, whether it's the National Assembly or the Senate, to prioritize and to fast-track the necessary legislation so that we are able to have a more structured and better coordinated response to disasters.
The Meteorological Department of Kenya has warned Kenyans that the rainy season is likely to continue in many parts of the country and that there is a possibility of landslides and floods in at least 40 counties. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The Rwandan government is urging rebels who attacked the country from neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo to lay down their arms and come back home. The appeal followed two alleged attacks in northern and western Rwanda in less than 1 month. Eugene Wimana has details from Kigali.
One of the two most recent attacks was a grenade blast last weekend in the western provincial city of Kamembe and wounded four civilians. And that attack claimed the lives of 14 civilians in northern Rwanda just 2 weeks ago. Major General Alex Kagame, the commander of Rwanda Defense Force in a western province, says the government is urging the FDLR to lay down their arms. They should come home peacefully without bloodshed. We are urging you, Rwandans who have your relatives in rebel groups, tell them to come, don't hide them. Report them whenever you think are planning to destabilize the country. The alleged FDLR rebel attackers allegedly fled Rwanda after committing the genocide against the Tutsi in 1994. Some have put down their arms and came back. Others are still in the forest of DRC, believing in the cause of overthrowing President Kagame's regime. For some Rwandans, there are other reasons why the rebels cannot come home. Some families who have relatives in the forest sometimes prevent them from coming home because they own their properties. They keep lying them that the ruling system is bad just for the sake of not losing farms, houses, and other properties. Here are people who communicate with their relatives in FDLR, but they can't encourage them to come. Since the election of a new Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi, Rwanda and DRC are working on a joint force to eliminate what they call negative forces fighting to destabilize Rwanda. Rwandan President Paul Kagame says this is the right time.
We rejoined yesterday, so we've been waiting. I am glad that we have a person there saying he wants to work with the neighbors to get rid of this problem, because this problem has been there for too long. And it affects the Congo, it affects the neighbors, it affects all of us. So there is no point in sitting with that problem.
The DRC says over 100 rebel groups are operating in its forest. The Rwandan government so far has received and demobilized 12,000 former militants. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
A new report shows that a three-year program to strengthen systems for universal birth registration in four African countries has resulted in sharply higher registrations. Mavis Ocheri has more from Washington, D.C.
Since 2017, the program backed by UNICEF and the European Union has supported birth registration in districts in Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Uganda, and Zambia. In these four countries, registration rates have stagnated or remain stubbornly low. In Zambia, the program saw birth registration coverage almost double in the focus district to 134,500 births in 2019. Zambia's success is a result of taking birth registration services closer to communities through health facilities, as well as changes in the birth registration laws. The changes made it possible for birth certificates to be issued and printed at the subnational levels. In Uganda, there was almost 300% increase of parents registering the birth of their children children over 4 months this year in 8 districts compared with 2018 numbers. Marika Matila, Child Protection Specialist at the UNICEF Regional Office for West and Central Africa, says UNICEF working with the EU is working to bring in registration services closer to people.
So we know that access to services is really one of the main obstacles for parents to register their children within the legal delay, which is the time period that prescribes when the child should be registered. And this is also when registration is free of charge. So civil registration centres can be very far from the population, especially in rural areas. And then travelling to those centres, not only once, but very often parents may have to go for 3 times if the birth certificate is not ready when they go there for the first time or even second time. And all this then bring in additional costs that not all parents can afford. The other reason that we know being a barrier or obstacle for parents to register is lack of information on, first of all, what is the time period set by the law that the child should be registered, and then also how to register.
She says the absence of birth certificates hampers children's access to fundamental rights such as education and health care. Inadequate birth registration records makes it harder for government to plan and budget. It also leaves children at greater risk of abuses such as child marriage and child labor. Matila says from 2017 to 2019, registration rates doubled in 2 regions of Cameroon, Mokolo and Batira, where the EU and UNICEF program was implemented. She said despite the worsening security in Burkina Faso's Sahel region, the program worked with health facilities to boost registration.
The security context has had severe impact on the provision of services in the Sahel region. So several health centers and civil registration centers have been closed. Some of them have even come under direct attacks. The civil registration records have been destroyed or otherwise lost. But what we have noticed is that in those health centers that have been continuing to provide the birth declaration service, the registration rates have still continued to increase, which means that even despite the emergency, parents and health workers place high importance to registration of births to give their children a legal identity.
Matila says birth registration is a core function of government and they must work around the clock to scale up the registration of children in Africa. Reporting for the VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Guinea's Electoral Commission has again postponed the much-awaited and controversial parliamentary elections to an unspecified date. The election was scheduled to take place in December this year after being postponed again from January this year. There were protests last week against what the opposition say is an attempt by President Alpha Condé to seek a third term. Some in the opposition have accused the president of refusing to hold the parliamentary election as a pretext to have a third term after his current second term ends next year. Sidya Touré, leader of the opposition Union of Republican Party Forces, says one reason for the postponement could be that the commission failed to put together an electoral list before scheduling the election. The spokesperson for South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance Party says the decision by the mayor of Johannesburg to step down as mayor and resign from the party is regrettable. Herman Mashaba announced he will step down next month as the mayor of Johannesburg and resign from the Democratic Alliance Party. His planned resignation comes after the recent election of Helen Zille as chairperson of the party's federal council. And that's it for this Tuesday, October 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout artists? New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. ¶¶